actually happened, but it wasn't by some grand decree. It's like trying to explain why nobody saw it. Once everyone started to see that the world was much smaller than ever before, and over there wasn't so far anymore. What we did unto others washed up on our shore. The answer was hard to ignore. The end of war.
Good evening and welcome to Peace Talk, a production by the Juneau Chapter of Veterans for Peace for KTOO's radio's focus on community. This is VFP's contribution to our community's ongoing conversation about war and peace and the important issues and questions they raise in our society and around the world. I'm Rich Moniak, your host for tonight's program. Our subject tonight is Gaza. We'll be listening to two pre-recorded interviews about the 51-day Israeli war on the occupied territory. The first will be with Naomi Dan of Jewish Voice for Peace. Then we'll hear a voice from Gaza itself, that of 16-year-old Haitaman Mohana, an exchange student who spent the last year in Haines. Before we get to these interviews, I want to say that I'm not going to present the Israeli government point of view. The program will echo the formal position of VFP's national organization about the war this past summer in Gaza. VFP issued a statement which expressed outrage at what it called, quote, the State of Israel's slaughter of many innocent civilians in Gaza, end quote. The statement also contained these formal positions, and I quote, Veterans for Peace calls for an end to the inhumane 8-year siege of Gaza so that normal trade and travel can occur and so that residents of Gaza may have the basic necessities of life. VFP will push for an end to all military aid to Israel. Veterans for Peace recommits itself to participating in the international campaign of boycott, divestment, and sanctions against Israel and Israeli products. Veterans for Peace also encourages all parties to search for a nonviolent path to peace. Dissent is vital to the larger democracy we want America to be. Opposing actions of our government through civil means is a cornerstone of our freedom. And it must include our right to speak up against actions and policies of other countries which our government supports. Veterans for Peace recognizes that there are two sides to every conflict. However, in the case of the Middle East, led by members of Congress and much of the mainstream news media, the side of the Israeli government dominates the conversation in America. So tonight you'll be hearing the other side. Naomi Dan has been to the West Bank. She is an American. She is Jewish. Naomi is a graduate of Vassar College with a degree in Peace and Justice Studies, and is a media fellow at Jewish Voice for Peace. Last Thursday, I spoke with her about her organization and the war in Gaza. So let's listen to what she had to say. Why don't you tell me about what Jewish Voice for Peace is, what kind of organization it is, when was it formed, and what's its main mission?
So Jewish Voice for Peace is a national grassroots member-based organization and works with Jews and across a wide range of partnerships with interfaith groups and Palestinian groups in the U.S. and on the ground in Israel and in Palestine towards achieving a just peace in the region. We are a grassroots member-based group. That means that we have chapters across the United States. Our numbers have grown dramatically over the summer as a consequence of the violence in Gaza. But we currently have around 40 chapters across the country and I think up to 18 new chapters that have formed in the last few weeks. We have over 190,000 online supporters who support online campaigns that we run at targeted audiences aiming at the U.S. government to stop funding, unconditional funding for the Israeli military, and also at BDS targets that our chapters are working towards withdrawing support for companies that are involved in the occupation. And so our supporters have grown dramatically over the last couple weeks, and we have really seen an upsurge in voices of people who want to stand up and say that what the Israeli government is doing is wrong and immoral and devastating, and that as Jews we have this special responsibility, and as Americans we have a special responsibility to be speaking out against it.
Okay, can you describe some of the efforts and some actions maybe that you've taken to try to reach these goals?
Yes. So our chapters run campaigns, more long-term boycott campaigns against specific targets. And this summer, while the violence was happening in Gaza, a number of our chapters across the country engaged in some escalated direct action tactics. For example, we had five members from our Chicago chapter were arrested in a civil disobedience action at the headquarters of Boeing. We also did civil disobedience actions at the headquarters of Boeing that are in Seattle. Here in New York, where I'm based, our local chapter was involved in an action getting arrested in a civil disobedience protest at the Friends of the IDF. And so this type of escalated civil disobedience action, sitting down and saying no in front of these targets that support the violence or fund the violence or profit off of violence, in the region, that was kind of a result of people being very upset and angry about what happened this summer. And so that was an escalation of some of our tactics. And I think the energy coming out of the summer and coming out of people's very deep concern about what's happening in Israel and what's happening to Palestinians is going to escalate further.
So can you add a little bit about Boeing? Describe exactly what you feel Boeing is contributing or profiting from in its support of the Israeli defense forces or the occupation in general.
So Boeing is a company that profits not only off of occupation, but it specifically profited off of the killing of Palestinian civilians in Gaza. Boeing equipment jets were used in the bombing of Gaza. And so it's a very clear example, it's a very good target of a company that is directly profiting off of war and off of the killing of civilians. So it's very clearly a target to stand up to and say this is unjust and we demand that you withdraw, divest from this work.
Well, with Gaza, with the war this summer, it probably didn't come as a total surprise to an organization that's been following and actively working on behalf of the Palestinian human rights. What do you think were the main factors that led to this outburst in July?
Well, the mainstream media would tell you that the beginning of this recent upsurge of violence was the kidnapping of three settler teenagers in June. But that presents a really limited view of what the real underlying causes of this summer's violence were. And we know, as an organization that has been working on Palestinian rights issues for a long time, that the ongoing occupation of the West Bank and the siege of Gaza are at the root of the violence this summer, and that this is not a cycle of violence that just flares up every once in a while because Hamas does something terrible. It's really it's a system of oppression that has existed for decades that is causing intense misery and frustration and ongoing daily violence, much less visible than the bombing of Gaza, but the daily violence of occupation, living under military occupation in the West Bank or living under siege in Gaza or living in Israel as a Palestinian Israeli facing discrimination, that this system of oppression is at the root of this recent violence.
And what about during the conflict? Israel claimed, I mean, there was more than 2,000 people killed. I believe the numbers I've heard range from 80% were civilians. A high percentage of those were children. And the Israeli government tried to take the high road by claiming Hamas was to blame because they used people as human shields. How do you feel about that?
Well, really, and that's the kind of thing that we hear all the time, that claim about human shields, but it's actually, I find it very deeply disturbing to put the blame on the victims for their own victimization. And we know that Gaza is an intensely, densely populated place, and there's 1.7 million people living in a very small area. And so it's all warfare that's happening in an urban context. And that means that there's a high risk to civilians, and the Israeli government has been, in contrary to international law, they have used excessive force against civilian areas and in densely populated urban areas that has caused egregious loss of civilian life, and this is deeply disturbing.
Yeah, regarding the proportionality to it, I find it disturbing that both the U.S. and Israel have not actually signed on to that part of the Geneva Accords. It's almost as if they exempt themselves because we think we're going to go that route. What do you feel about Hamas's firing rockets and they're using tunnels to smuggle from Egypt, to smuggle anything from Egypt, and using the tunnels to attack Israel on their side of the border?
We and JVP and I in particular absolutely condemn any use of violence, but we have to understand that this is in the context of a siege that's been going on for 8 years, under occupation for the last 47 years, and that the Israeli government, with their policies, has only encouraged this kind of violence. And any attempts to achieve justice for Palestinians in nonviolent ways have been repressed by the Israeli government, and so the response has been this kind of violence.
So when Fatah and Hamas split back in 2007, it was after a democratic election, which put Hamas in the position of power for all of Palestine. That's the siege escalated at that point in time, and the U.S., Israel, and the European Union is largely considers Hamas to be a terrorist organization. Do you think the U.S. and Israel should be negotiating with Hamas?
I personally think that there's no way to resolve this without direct face-to-face negotiations, and that only by having these conversations can make any sort of progress in that realm. But I do think that the U.S. is not an honest broker in the so-called peace process. The U.S. Funds Israel hugely, including the $3.1 billion of unconditional military aid every year. And so the U.S. is not an honest broker to facilitate a peace process.
And obviously then you believe that the U.S. Should support the reconciliation between the two parties in Palestine.
Yes. I think that Palestinian unity is going to be key towards moving towards some kind of negotiated peace. We know that the peace process is sort of falsely based on this idea of parity, of equality between the two sides, of balance, and that's not the case. This is a situation where an oppressor state and an oppressed people who have been under military occupation for nearly half a century can't negotiate in a peace process that claims that it's equal.
Well, and that probably applies to the ceasefire terms recently negotiated between Hamas and the Israeli Defense Forces or the Israeli government. The weaker party, obviously, was Hamas. Do you think they had their side of concerns adequately addressed by the current ceasefire?
Well, Hamas's main demand in all of the ceasefire negotiations that were started and sort of fell apart this summer was the ending of the blockade, the ending of the siege of Gaza. And eventually they did receive some sort of, I guess, promise that the siege would be lifted in certain ways and the conversations would continue on lifting that siege completely. And we haven't seen the Israeli government move towards lifting the blockade. And the longer that this goes on without any real change to the situation, without any real change to the ability of Palestinian mobility and the free flow of goods and services, the more likely it is that we see another outburst of violence.
So you don't expect it to hold it unless Israel holds up their end of the bargain?
I don't expect it, and I think that Hamas has stated as such that violence will be the result of not sticking to their side of the bargain.
So looking at the American perspective, how do you work with the United States Congress in terms of, competing for its attention with an organization like the American Israeli Public Action Committee?
So Jewish Voice for Peace plays a special role in this way because we are Jews and American Jews, and we have this special responsibility both as Jews and Americans whose taxpayer money goes towards funding the Israeli military. And so we're speaking up in a growing voice and saying that the American Public Affairs Committee, that Jewish mainstream institutions that unconditionally support Israel don't speak for us, and we're making that voice heard in a number of different ways, and in Congress as well. We've recently put more effort into our work at the congressional level, and we're starting to see more people listening to us and to our growing power, because we are really, really growing, and there are more and more people who think that something is wrong and that they need to be speaking out.
Well, a lot of criticism that's been leveled on many Jewish people in America and around the world who oppose the Israeli government's occupation and its military actions. There's that term, self-hating Jew. Obviously, that doesn't scare you or anybody in the organization.
It does deeply sadden me to be called a self-hating Jew, and I think it's this short-sighted the kind of inability or unwillingness of people to listen to reason, and this, it's kind of an excuse to keep people in denial and to put on those blinders that avoid seeing the injustice that's going on. So it's saddening to be called a self-hating Jew. I think it's very offensive, but I'm doing this work out of my Jewish values, and that's what this organization is based on, the Jewish values of justice for all, equality for all, dignity for all, and those universal values of human rights. And we see those as very Jewish, and we see this as coming from, our work is coming from a Jewish tradition of social justice.
So over the long haul, nothing immediately is going to happen. Never seems to. But what do you see the path to a real, true, lasting peace and a true justice? There's a lot of other elements that have been fought over for years. There's the right of return. There's the settlements that have encroached further into the West Bank. There was the recent acquisition or theft of acreage by Israel in the West Bank, supposedly in response to the killing and murdering of the three teenagers, but the U.S. said that was counterproductive. So there's a lot of other issues besides Gaza. How do you see the whole thing? What's the path to a lasting peace?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? But really, the whole picture is this: the underlying issues of occupation and military repression and discrimination and injustice. And so the first step towards any sort of justice and a peace with justice, because just peace usually means that it's quiet for Israelis and it's safe for Israelis, but it means that under occupation, Palestinians are still suffering and being killed on a daily basis. And so the occupation is really the first, ending the occupation is the first step towards a just peace. And pressure on Israel is absolutely needed to make that step. We've seen all of these rounds of peace talks and no progress being made, and we know that only pressure such as the work that the Global Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement is doing, pressure from the American government, pressure from the American Jewish community, all of this is going to be needed to make Israel change those policies and to end the occupation.
Do you have anything else that you could add to that questions and discussion we've had that would enlighten people who are not aware of what's really going on over there?
Well, I guess I said this, but I'll reiterate it. I just came back from a trip right before the recent violence in Gaza. I was in the West Bank in June, and seeing the daily violence of what life is like under a military occupation, the checkpoints, the settler-only roads, the indignity of being subject to searches, to home invasions, to raids, unequal access to water, all of these pieces that make up what life under a military occupation means are absolutely essential for Americans who are sort of unaware of really what's going on there to understand and to know, because this is not a conflict that, like I said before, that is a cycle of violence that has flare-ups every now and then, but there is a system in place of repression and oppression, that is daily, and we don't see that a lot of the time, but it's happening, and this injustice is happening on a daily basis.
Well, I want to say I appreciate your time to talk to us, and Naomi, I appreciate your courage to stand for principles against our government and an Israeli government that has been oppressing the majority of people that occupy Palestine. It's a commendable work, and hopefully your organization can help make some progress and some difference in this.
Thank you, and thank you so much for reaching out to us, and thank you as well for the work that you're doing on this.
So you've been listening to Naomi Dan of Jewish Voice for Peace in an interview I had with her this past week, mostly focused on the recent war in Gaza. And there are many Jewish voices in America speaking out against the Israeli government. When I went to Gaza in 2009, I traveled with 48 other Americans, 64 people all told from other countries. More than half of those people were Jewish. As Naomi said, this voice is growing, and it needs to be heard. And but now, before we move on to our second interview, I'd like to play. Well, first, let me remind listeners we're listening to KTOO in Juneau, and this is Peace Talk. I'm Rich Moniak. This is a regular monthly program produced by Veterans for Peace. And before we move on, I'm going to play a song from Phil Collins' 1993 hit, Both Sides of the Story.
Thank you.
Well, this is Peace Talk on KTOO Radio, and that was Phil Collins singing Both Sides of the Story. And it's a reminder to us how every conflict, whether it's domestic, between friends, and between nations, there's two sides to every story. And as I began with the program tonight, I expressed my interest in telling the minority viewpoint on this story, the story between Israel and Palestine. The occupation of Palestinian territory that has been in going on for 47 years, the siege of Gaza, which has been going on for 8 years. We don't hear that side of the story, the Palestinian side of the story, the opposition side of the story in our own country is muffled largely by the mainstream media. We have a Congress that has a 13% approval rating during the course of most of the year. Both sides of the political spectrum think the other side is wrong until it comes to this issue. The United States Senate voted 100-0 to support Israel's attack on Gaza, regardless of how many men, women, and innocent children were being killed. Elizabeth Warren, one notable liberal voice, said that Israel had the right to defend themselves. Against what? Against rockets, apparently, that are aimed at Israeli civilians. Veterans for Peace doesn't support that position. Jewish Voice for Peace doesn't support the firing of rockets by Hamas either. But Israel, by and large, has the weaponry to do far more damage, and that's the part of the discussion that we need to have. Israel and the United States' support for Israeli weapons is in the root cause of or allowing Israel to continue the occupation that, as Naomi Dan said during her interview, is the primary reason that this conflict has gone on. The structural problem is the occupation. Now we're going to move to an interview I had with Haitham Ohana. He's a 16-year-old Palestinian youth who studied in Haines, Alaska this past year. He was in the United States on a grant, ironically enough, offered by the U.S. State Department. The YES scholarship brings students from predominantly or from countries with significant Muslim populations to the United States to study here, to teach us about their culture, to learn about our culture in hopes of building bridges to put an end to the violence that exists between the Middle East, the Muslim world, and ours, especially during these past 14 years now. Many of you may recognize Haitham from his front page picture in the Juneau Empire in April. He was holding a large origami peacock that he helped the Thunder Mountain students make, and it was given to the Alaska State Legislature as a peace gift, as a peace offering, his country to ours. He also, while he was in Haines, he made one of those peacocks from 2,000 pieces of paper all by himself. He presented it to the school district there, did a talk one evening for sponsored by the Haines People for Peace, won himself an award for the YES Program's National Education Week Award. He was named the Student of the Month in the program. And while he was in Haines, he was also a volunteer for the Haines Fire Department. And when I attended his farewell talk in Haines, I was amazed at how many members of that of the fire department showed up and wished him well. He was a hardworking kid, and they really loved him. So on Saturday this past week, I spoke with Haitham by Skype, recorded the interview here in the studio. He has lost a little bit of his command of English since he doesn't get to practice it every day anymore. So have a little patience for that. Remember, he's a 16-year-old. His Palestinian accent may be also a challenge to listen to, but he's a bright young man, and he has a story to tell. So here's Haitham Ohana. You got back to Gaza middle of June or late June, and the war broke out shortly after that. What was it like being there while Israel was bombing and during the land invasion, the land attacks?
Well, after I came to the U.S. as a part of the exchange student, and I came here in Gaza, and about after a week, the war started, and I felt very sad and terrible about it, because going in a war before adjusting for the normal life is a big challenge. I think when the war started, at the beginning, we didn't expect that they're going to bomb Gaza. The war started because they think that Hamas claimed that they kidnapped the three settlers. And Hamas did not say or that they did it. And they just start bombing Gaza. And they start just killing people in Gaza. So we have the right to defense for human rights. And we have the right to our to defense for these bombs that are dropping on us and dropping on children. And also we have the right to resist against the attack that we are having. So my feeling about the situation that I passed is very sad and very difficult for me.
So, and you're in Gaza City itself. You're in the largest city in Gaza, correct?
That's right.
Are you on the outskirts of the main area? Are you, how close are you to the border with Israel?
I live in Gaza City, which is about 1.5 miles far of the Mediterranean Sea and about 3 miles from the Israeli borders.
Were bombs dropped in your neighborhood? Were they close to your home?
Yeah, many bombs were dropped. Like, you know, the Gaza Strip is very small and very populated, so any bomb in the Gaza Strip, you will hear it and you will feel it. The whole house will be shaking. So any bomb is dropped in Gaza Strip is nearby. There is no safe zone in the Gaza Strip because it's very close from the both sides. And during the war, the Israeli ships, they were on the shore of the Mediterranean Sea, and they were shooting bombs everywhere without even knowing where it's going to drop. So it was really dangerous living in any place in the Gaza Strip. Many bombs were dropped beside our house, and safely we're still alive. The people who live in the Gaza Strip, all the people who live in the Gaza Strip are targeted because the bombs don't know the difference between a human or a building or anything else. They just bomb and they explode everyone and they kill everyone there. So the Israel will, in general, the Israelis didn't exactly bomb just the Hamas. They start bombing everywhere, the children, the people, buildings, empty lands, graves. They bombed the graves, and there is no reason.
Were buildings damaged very close to your home?
There is a building that were completely destroyed about half a mile from our house. And also, not just one house, many houses. And there was a tower, the Italian tower, was bombed and was destroyed about a mile far of my house. All of this keep us in worry and just tell us you're the next one that's going to be bombed. And this is also a stress on you and tension a lot. For me, I'm not ready for this. I just came back from America, as they live in peace and they have many things, advantages. But I'm not ready for the war, as I came back without adjusting to the normal life.
And the normal life means what to you? What did it mean before the war?
Normal life is without bombing, trying to adjust to the weather, first of all, because I used to live in Alaska in a cold weather, and here it's really hot. Second thing about the freedom. I know back in Alaska, I used to go anywhere, everywhere, but here I have some limits. I can't go farther than that. So I should adjust, you know. I can't just jump from place to place without adjusting. So there's a big difference between the normal in America and the normal here in Gaza.
Did your family all stay together during the war?
Yeah. All my family stayed together during the home. My father had the chore to go and get food for the family. My aunt came for about 2 weeks or 10 days to stay in our house because her house was in a really dangerous zone. And at the end, her apartment in the tower was destroyed, and because they bombed the whole tower, and the whole tower destroyed. So her apartment gone, now it's gone.
Did you get out of the home much at all, or was it just your father leaving when he had to go get food?
During the 50 days that we passed through during the war, it was really difficult for us to go out from the house. I got out of the house mostly during the ceasefire, because the ceasefire was the only choice for us breathe from out of the house and to get a little bit air from outside.
Imagine your electricity wasn't readily available during this.
Yeah, for sure. This is another problem because the Israelis bombed the electricity, so we didn't have electricity for more than 10 days. That's really caused many problems because without electricity, we didn't have fridges and freezers, and the weather was very hot. And another thing, that many diseases came out because there is no pumping for the sewage from the cities. So you can see all the sewage on the streets just running out and flooding because there is no pumping machines, because there is no electricity. And this caused pollution and diseases.
The sewage, is it running now back to normal?
Yeah, now it's running back to normal because we have around 6 hours a day electricity.
And what about the electricity? Is that normal 6 hours a day? Is that what you had before?
Well, actually, we had 8 hours a day before, and now we have 6 hours.
And what's the long-term prospect? I mean, is Gaza starting to rebuild in any way?
Well, it's rebuilding in a slow way, because the first thing nowadays, the Israelis negotiation to get Hamas out of Gaza, and they can start rebuilding Gaza from the war.
What do you mean, getting Hamas out of Gaza?
They want to get the weapons of Hamas out of Gaza, so they can open the borders, so rebuilding can and reconstruction can start again for Gaza.
So as long as Hamas doesn't disarm, you're saying Israel will not allow you to start rebuilding. They'll prevent materials from coming in for rebuilding. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Reconstruction process is very slow because they are preventing the materials.
So in terms of the ground war, when Israel came through with their ground forces, their tanks, their infantry, the soldiers on foot, did you see soldiers come into your area?
I didn't see any soldiers coming to our area, but I saw some flares in the sky, and they usually shoot these flares when they engage Hamas with Israelis. And the flares was about less than 2 miles far from my house.
Let's talk about your family situation there a little bit. Your aunt stayed with you. You have siblings, correct?
That's right. I have now I have three siblings, two sisters and one brother.
And were they all in Gaza during this attack?
Yes, all of them were in Gaza during the attack, and my aunt has also two sons and one daughter. So we were almost about 12 people in the house.
And how old is the oldest and the youngest among the children?
The youngest one was about 6 years old, and the oldest one was about my grandmother, who lives with us, about 8 years old.
And you're 16, correct?
Yeah, I'm 16.
Okay, tell me a little bit about how the younger children reacted during all this. Explain to me what you witnessed with your younger siblings and cousins.
Well, the most family didn't sleep at night at all. The bombs were dropping like crazy everywhere. My little brother keeps crying and he's very scared. Also, my 12-year-old sister, she was really scared and she was really frightened about it.
And were you able to help alleviate their fears, or were you afraid in such a way that it didn't allow you ease their fears?
Well, my biggest role was not to feel or to make them feel that it's really frightening for them. So for me, I can't cry, because if I cry, they will not feel safe. So I'm just trying to keep them calm as possible. And it's not really a calm situation. It wasn't really a calm situation. It was just like a crazy war. So I couldn't do much. I just keep praying, hope people's going to do better from outside, and the negotiation will continue and we'll stop the war, and a long ceasefire will come and happen. But this is the only role that I had. I didn't have many choices to do.
There was an early ceasefire that didn't last very long, and you mentioned you were able to go out during that ceasefire. What happened when that ceasefire ended? Did everybody return to the home like it was before?
Well, the hour that they said there's going to be a ceasefire, it was like a a big thing is going on. So if everyone just went out from the house in the street, every people or everyone in Gaza was on the streets, actually. Everyone. The whole streets were fully and crowded because everyone wants the, his human rights and wants to get the actual and to feel freedom as many people from outside feel.
One of the things Americans read and heard a lot was that Israel was blaming Hamas for civilian deaths. Israel claimed that Hamas used Gazan people as human shields. And one report I remember reading that Israel claimed that they had video footage of Hamas telling the people of Gaza not to leave your home, that you would be better to become a martyr than to run away. Is that what happened?
Well, the Israelis sent papers and they called them on the homes, said them to evacuate the house or they're going to bomb them. And there's going to be engagement in that area. Hamas started to say, stay at your house. It's not true. They are just trying to tell you to leave your house because they want to empty this place. And we didn't really expect that they're going to do what they did. So it was kind of a surprise for us when they did what they did as a massacre.
Did you see any leaflets that were dropped by Israeli planes warning people to leave?
Yes, I did.
Did they come by your home?
No, they didn't. But they called many houses about, like they called a neighborhood maybe 1 mile away from my house. They called a neighborhood, all the whole neighborhood. They just tried saying, evacuate, evacuate. And most of the areas that they said evacuate, the people who were there, they didn't evacuate. And nothing happened. The Israelis didn't bomb or... But there were some areas that we didn't expect that they did, and they bombed there.
When you say they called, do you mean they called by telephone?
Yeah, they called by telephone. But again, you know, when they say Hamas are using human and children as a shield, this is not true. It's not reasonable to kill a child because he's a shield. I didn't see anyone he's a shield in the Gaza Strip. I saw, on the ceasefire, Israelis bombed 10 kids on the street. They were playing, and there was no rockets or firing from that place. How can you explain shield?
You witnessed this?
Yes.
During the ceasefire?
Yes.
And how could you determine they were Israeli bombs?
An F-16 bomb is not, it's really a big bomb. It's not as our rockets. Our rockets, they may just, you know, it's there's way different between our rockets and the F-16 rockets and bombs. The F-16 rockets can destroy the whole building. And you can just see the difference in the damage from the Hamas rockets and the F-16 rockets. And Israel, they made Hamas as a huge power, and we didn't have planes, we didn't have tanks, we didn't have any developed equipment for the war.
I don't understand what you mean. You said they made Hamas a huge power?
Well, they make it as an empire, you know. They make it that they have rockets, and they have, and they have, and they have. And we don't have tanks, we don't have planes, we don't have ships, we don't have... We just have rockets and... soldiers on foot. We didn't have planes and tanks, and we didn't have developed equipment as Israelis do.
So are you saying you believe Israel exaggerated the threat that Hamas posed to Israel?
Exactly.
So this is not your first experience with a war?
Yes, this is my third war.
And the first one was in 2008-09?
That's right.
And how does this one compare to what happened then?
Well, the first one wasn't as destructive as this one. This one was, it was unacceptable, unexpectable for everyone. They just started to shoot everyone, innocent people, kids, children playing soccer in the street, people who were just standing on the windows. They just shoot everywhere. So we couldn't really get out from our house. We have a yard in our house, at the front of our house, and we couldn't really get in this yard, a small place. We didn't get really to go, for example, play a soccer or play during the war. So we were really trapped. But comparing to the first war, we can go out. We have the ability to go out, and we can go out and play soccer and play many activities, and we can have a little bit of freedom, but not this, like this one. This one was completely unfair because they just start killing people and children and innocent people.
So
in the first one, we weren't afraid as much as this one.
And what when was the other war? Was that the November 2012? What was that war like?
That one was about just 8 days. It was a short period of time. It wasn't like this one, about more than a month and a half. It was just less than 2 weeks.
Now you've seen wars through, not only three wars, but wars that at very different ages. In 2009, you were 11 years old?
Yes.
And
I was 11 years old. And
do you think this war was more frightening to you then, as a 16-year-old, than when you were 11?
Yeah, because it was more, everyone felt more afraid. Because everyone in the Gaza Strip was targeted.
Let's talk about your time in the United States and what you brought here, what you brought home, and how have your views of the United States changed? When you came here, what did you expect to find from Americans in relation to their understanding of Israel and Gaza, especially Israel and Palestine?
Unfortunately, there weren't many people knowing about our situation. And when I came, I did a few presentations to let them know what our situation is like. I started this presentation in Haines, and there was a good attendance number there, about 75 people, and I was really glad to know that many people would like to know more about our situation.
Is it true that you met your first Israeli citizen in Haines?
Yeah, that's right. I met the first Israeli person in my life in Haines, in America.
And was that?
And it was kind of surprising, because it wasn't really surprising, but it was kind of what I expected. In America, there is the freedom, and there is the diversity. Okay.
So the Israeli citizen you met in Haines, she was living in America, and she attended your talk?
Well, yes, she did attend my presentation, and I let her spoke for about a minute or two, and she said she wants peace with the Palestinians and the Israelis, and I was really glad that she is really understanding the situation, and she is really fighting and standing with what people want here.
So, and that presentation was sponsored by the Haines People for Peace, is that correct?
That's right.
Were you surprised to see a peace group supporting Palestinian human rights when you came to the United States?
I was kind of surprised because I have a stereotype Americans are biased to Israelis because of their governments, but there are a few people and some people who are really thoughtful, and they know what's the true and what's wrong in our situation, what can be done to have a better situation and peace.
And how do you feel about America now after this war?
I feel a little bit sad about from the American government, and I didn't really expect what they did after I saw this war. Many bombs, it was written on them, made in the U.S.
Did you see those?
Yeah, I saw pictures of these, and I saw pictures of these from my friend.
You remember making your presentation to the state legislature in Juneau when you presented the Peace Peacock? Do you still feel that is a sign of peace that you hope that can be honored by Alaskans and leave a message? This, even after this war, you still believe peace is possible and still hope for peace?
I did 2,000 papers for peace. I did a lot of work there in Haines just to make people believe that I still have the hope to have a better situation. And I still believe and I still hope for the peace.
So you will be going to school this year. This is your senior year in high school. What do you hope to do after this year?
Well, this is my senior year. After that, I'm going to try to specialize as a doctor so I can help my people here in Gaza, because they really need a lot of help in the medical situation, because we have a lot of wars. And I believe it's not the last war that's going to come, but I hope it will be.
And you've just been listening to Haitham Ohana speak from Gaza, the Gaza Strip. This is Rich Moniak, and this has been Peace Talk on KTOO in Juneau. We're about running out of time here. Thank you for joining us tonight. I want to thank Naomi Don for joining us from Jewish Voice for Peace, and for John Kremer and Dolly Kremer, who are helping me run this production out of the studio. Have a good night.